Off trail, on trail, they're all one thing, aren't they? Hello, my name is Constantine, hiker, rambler, owner and founder of 11 Skies. We created a podcast here to highlight and represent what it takes to make through hiking, long distance backpacking, adventures, outdoor life possible. Questions that focus on the how and the who, not necessarily the what. We all share this love for what we call the outdoors, but everybody's different. The diversity is what makes it wonderful. And just like the trails themselves, the diversity of how people make this life possible and how people continue to live the life that they truly love is what really has inspired us and makes us want to continue to learn about these people. So this is the Off Trail Podcast where, yeah, we might talk about trails from here and there. It's hard to make a hiker not ramble about trail systems, but mostly we're going to learn about the people. We're going to learn about what makes it possible and how they function and how they manage and how they strategize their time off trail, make on trail possible. Enough of our rambles. Let's just get into it, shall we? Welcome back to the Off Trail Podcast. My name is Constantine, and today we have the one and only Chris. Oh no, Chris! I wrote it down. Chris Perello. Is that the correct name?
Yeah.
Correct way? Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Well done. That's a hard last name for to navigate, but well done.
Yes, I'm gonna give myself a high five. It's gonna be a good rest of the day. And yeah, Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, Constantine, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. So, Cookie Monster is your trail name. This is usually I have a different first question, but. Personally, I love cookies, so I kind of want to know how you got Cookie Monster as your trail name.
We're jumping right into it.
Okay. Yeah.
So my first long-distance trail, I hiked the Appalachian Trail in 2008. AT was my first trail, like a lot of people. And I totally decided to do the AT kind of last minute. You know, I had about 2 months. I decided, New Year's Day that, fuck it, I'm going to go hike the trail. I didn't really have a whole lot of time to plan, especially financially. So I didn't have enough money to finish trail. I knew I was going to really be short come up cash wise.
Yeah.
But I did happen to have a fair amount of cannabis laying around the house. And so my plan was to just make as many pot cookies as I could. and ship them to myself on trail, and that henceforth, you know, became known as Cookie Monster.
I'm so happy that was the first question of the show. That
we'll jump right in. I made 42 dozen, I think about 500 pot cookies, it was an adventure.
Oh my God, I never anticipated this is where it was going to bring us. I was going to be like, oh, he just likes cookies. He just likes to resupply on cookies. The story behind that trail name has to be one of the best ones I've ever heard. I have so many questions. Okay, we're going to have questions before we get deeper into this. One, out of those 500, how many were you eating a day?
Well, and so herein lies the issue, right? Like I said, the AT was my first long-distance trail, so I didn't really... I had done some backpacking and I had done a lot of international travel backpacking, but carrying all of my own food was not something that, you know, for longer trips like that, wasn't really something that I had done in my experience of backpacking, mostly internationally.
Yeah.
The weight of all of these cookies was something to be reckoned with. So I would drop ship them to myself along trail in smaller quantities, but they were just too heavy. You know, it was just too much. And then the other problem is, you know, they're pot cookies. So like, you're like, oh, I'm going to sell them. And then the next thing you know, you've eaten half of what you have and you've given away another half and, you know, you're hanging out with friends like, here, have a cookie. And also like I don't know if the finance ever really worked out on the whole thing, but it does make for a great story. And by about the 500 mile, by about trail days, I was totally over the whole cookie experiment. They were just too heavy. It was just too much of a pain in the ass. It was too much risk at the time, you know, through the southern states and probably still now. The legality on that was highly questionable. And it was just an added stressor that I didn't really. That I didn't really need. You know, at the time I was living out in Oregon, and you know, although cannabis wasn't actually fully legal in 08, it was no big deal. It wasn't an issue. Yeah. But the southern states were a very different issue. So rather than like stress myself out about it too much, I basically had the last of them sent into Trail Days and just kind of moved them all at once, with the exception of a couple of small mail drops along the way to keep myself
fueled,
keep myself caloried. Yes.
Efficient calories.
Yeah, but the trail name became sort of the stuff of legends, and for the rest of that trail, I had people hiking me down, you know, like, I've been behind you for 3 days, you got any more of those cookies, you know, that kind of thing, and like, and even now, like, every now and then I'll be out on a trail and I'll run into someone and start chatting, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I'm Cookie Monster, and they're like, wait, like, the Cookie Monster from the 8C, and I'm like, yeah, that's me, you know, so... It happens from time to time, which is kind of funny.
That is a legendary story as well as a legendary trail name. Oh my God. How many people were trying to join your trail family at any given moment?
Yeah. I was popular on the AT especially. But also, I mean, I'm just a sociable person too, yeah. At least especially in those days, you know. And so, like, that was cool, man. I like making friends. I like hanging out. So. Yeah. That was good times. It's interesting to look back at those days and how much my like hiking style and personal style has evolved and changed since those days, you know? And, you know, I think about that now and I'm like, oh, mail dropping myself 500 pot cookies. It just sounds like a nightmare now, you know? But it seemed like a really good idea at the time. So
you learn a lot while you're out. Some lessons you never thought you would have learned before in life, but you learn, don't carry 500 cookies. I guess, yeah. So one last question before we bounce away from this tangent is, I guess it's not a question, more of a statement. Please tell me that you have a picture of yourself surrounded by 500 cookies before you left for the AT.
Well, again, in those days, the legality of such things were pretty dubious.
Okay. So yeah.
Anything that would constitute evidence was pretty much not not on the docket. But
you have the memory.
Yeah. And there are some photos floating around of me enjoying a cookie or two, and those in the know are like, oh, I recognize those cookies, you know, like, so, you know, there's some photos out there, but I don't have like the one photo of like, you know, all the mail drops or anything like that. That would have been epic. It would have been cool, but
impossible to.
I also, you know, I had to bake them over the span of like 2 or 3 weeks, because that's a lot of, I didn't have the oven space to crank out that kind of cookies all in one go, you know? Yeah. They were all ziplocked in 3 packs and then vacuum sealed by the dozen. And, each vacuum sealed dozen was like 3.5 pounds or something silly with all the plastic and everything. So it was just, they were just too much, you know?
I really, honestly, I'm at a loss for words. I can't think of a more legendary trail story than what you just told me right now. That is so awesome in so many ways. So okay, let's we could just talk about that for an hour, but let's get into some other stuff here. So Cookie Monster, yeah, I guess how we usually like to start the show is with a big question, and I feel like we've learned a little bit about you, or at least 2008 Cookie Monster, since we've been chatting. Yeah. But I'm gonna ask a question that's big, broad, open-ended, and just see where you take it. So the question is, who are you?
Wow, that is big and broad. Yeah, that's an interesting question, man. I'm a kid that read too much Jack Kerouac in high school. You know what I mean? I spent a decade before I started thru hiking just like traveling the world and like you know, backpacking around, and like I'd come home to Boston and like get a job and earn a couple grand and then disappear and travel until the money ran out and then come back and rinse and repeat and do it again and again, you know. And then in 08, I had been back from an international trip for a couple of years and was kind of struggling to put cash together, and decided I needed to clutch and shift because I couldn't afford an international trip, and started thru hiking. And then that became the next decade and change, you know? Wow. And I'm one of those people that is like, you know, all about the experience and about, you know, going out and seeing what's out there and checking out different cultures and eating the food and, you know, hiking the trails and seeing, you know, enjoying each trail for its own sort of individual aspect, you know?
What was that first decade like for you? That travel internationally, it takes a certain mindset to especially harness into that when you're young. So yeah, what was that first decade like for you before, getting into backpacking?
That was really formative, man. I was, you know, when you're in your 20s, you're really driven, right? You got a lot of hope, and you got a lot of energy, and you know, you can go on out and do a lot of epic shit and just sort of like hit it hard. And then like I look back on those days and I'm like, I can't believe I would work, you know, 3 jobs and sleep in a car for like 6 months to save up enough money to like cash it all in and disappear. And like, you know, at one point I did a 14 month around the world circumnavigation backpack trip, you know. So like, wow. Just like you just go big and you go epic. And and when that sort of like becomes the norm, when epic trips and epic adventures become the norm, the question then is what next? But you settle into a kind of a pattern of it, you know. Yeah. And it becomes a rhythm in your life, kind of like tides. And and you're like, okay, I'm going to go home and nest for a little while and work on the bank account. And then when I get a certain amount of money, boom, we're going to go and have some adventure. And what's the next adventure? What's the thing that's you know, intriguing at the moment? Let's go find that. And so that's kind of been my MO for the last basically 25 years, you know. And it's interesting to see how that's changed and evolved, but it kind of happened by accident in the late 90s, just like going off to Europe and like, you know, taking the trains around Europe and kind of checking that out, which was easy to do and highly addictive, apparently.
Yeah, once it gets into your blood, so to say, it's hard to live a normal life again. And that's kind of what the show focuses a lot around, is the living outside the quote unquote normalcy. And it sounds like you're doing that extremely well and having a great time at it. So those 25 years, you're talking about the progression of how it shifts, how you still hold that adventure lifestyle, but it might not be international travel. It might be more backpacking. So I hesitate to flash forward past those 10 years, but there's so much I want to talk to you about in this show. Is let's flash forward past the international travels and flash forward into 2008 Cookie Monster and what that brought you into and what your feelings around backpacking were on your first trail on the Appalachian Trail. I guess not feelings around backpacking for the first trail, but first long distance through hike.
The AT was one of those things, having grown up here in New England, man, the AT was one of those things that was sort of omnipresent in my consciousness, you know what I mean? Growing up as a Boy Scout and stuff, we went out and did weekend trips. And so I had a knowledge of the trail being there for as long as I can remember. And somewhere around high school was like, yeah, someday I'm going to hike that Appalachian Trail. Like, I think a lot of people sort of have that sort of like, man, I would like to do that someday. Mm-hmm. And then in 08, you know, it all came together that was what was going to happen and how it was going to go. And so I sort of jumped in, you know, head first without a whole lot of knowledge, but also without a whole lot of bad habits, which was good. You know, it's just like, here we go. We'll figure this out as we go. The same way I had, shoestring traveled for so many years. I was like, I'm just going to pack a bag and do it and we'll figure it out. And I did have a good background in wilderness and mountain sports and stuff like that. So I wasn't a complete, you know, noob and novice, but you know, the learning curve is quick on big trails like that. And the thing about the AT that I think was most life-changing for me was that, like, I expected the physical challenge of hiking lots of miles through mountainous terrain for a long period of time. I expected the challenges associated with backpacking, and I expected a lot of that. What I didn't expect was the community that I found. The thru-hiker community is really exceptional, and I'm a big fan of like micro communities and small little niche communities, and I'm kind of a member of a handful of different little sub communities, subcultures, you know.
Yeah.
But the thru-hiking community and the subculture that is thru-hiking is what kind of kept me coming back. Hmm. I could have easily been a one and done, you know, one trail wonder, but I definitely fell in love with the community, and that made me want to explore more trails and come back for more. And yeah, I'm still through hiking, and so you know, it's that community that kind of kept drawing me back in.
Huh. So this is my own curiosity here, is because I've experienced the hiking community, the through hiking community, however you want to define that, but I haven't necessarily experienced the international community, I don't know how you would define the community of what you did for those first 10 years, the community of travel, the community of living free. Are there similarities? Are there differences? Kind of compare those. I know that's going to be a hard question to answer, but kind of loosely, maybe compare those two communities. I'm just curious here.
Yeah, that is very interesting because they are there's a couple like moving parts here, right? So yeah. there are some overlaps and some similarities. We're also talking about a really interesting time in history where when I was, you know, doing international travel and stuff, like we didn't even have cell phones, you know what I mean? Like it was still all guidebook stuff. And it wasn't until, you know, and now when I threw, like, it's all digital maps and there's social media and your connection to your family is so much easier to do than sort of that, the beginnings, at least my sort of beginnings of the international travel stuff. So there's a lot of similarities in lifestyle and personalities. You know, back in the day, we didn't call it van life. We were just called homeless, you know. and now it's, you know, hashtag van life, and that's cool. But like, you know, in the late 90s, when I was like couch surfing and saving money to go on my next big trip, everyone just kind of thought I was crazy, you know. Like, so, you know, there isn't... On the international side of things, there isn't as well connected a community, but there's definitely, at least back in those days, there was definitely a sense of camaraderie amongst, you know, people that travel a lot. And like when I'd be hanging out in like Australia or something and I'd meet some people that are like, oh yeah, Boston was a cool town, man. I backpacked through there once in the, you know, back in the day. And, you know, if you need anything, come and stay at my spot for a little while. And so there's always been this sort of reciprocity amongst travelers.
Yeah.
And that carries over into the thru-hiker community, you know, like you can only thru-hike for so long before eventually you start trail angeling, you know what I mean? Like at some point you give back to that community that has given you so much, you know? Yeah, that overlaps quite a bit in that sort of mentality and philosophy of travelers looking out for each other, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was really curious about, because it feels like the connection on a thru-hike, no matter what trail, like AT, PCT, CDT, the connection comes from... You're out there traveling, you're out in this shared experience, you're out in this shared adventure, and you there's a base level of understanding because you've gone through what the person next to you has gone through, at least loosely, not the same foot pain, not the same aches or pains, but loosely you've gone through a lot of the same stimuli that the person next to you has gone through. But with international travel, you're even more broadly on the same goal of travel, but there's not a similar goal, if that makes sense. There's not... You're walking from Georgia to Maine. It's like you're using, I'm going to just pull out a country here. You're using Austria as a bounce off point to explore the surrounding area and then bounce to wherever you want to go, explore the mountains outside of there or explore the town. So like, do you guys have that automatic connection that's the same in the thru-hiking community?
Well, I think, especially back in those days, a sort of defining feature was the sort of the financial aspects of travel, right? Okay. There's a million different ways to travel. And those of us that were out there like grimy backpackers, totally shoestring budget, trying to stretch our couple of grand as long as we could so we could stay on the road, would end up in the same orbits. You know what I mean? You'd end up staying at the same cheapest hostel and that you could find.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you end up sort of in people that are traveling on that like really tight budget, sort of like really thirsty experience hunters, rather than the people that are, you know, jet set or well funded and staying in nice hotels and things like that. So there's in those days at least, a lot of it was defined more by economics than sort of anything else. You know, like you're always in the cheapest train ticket you could find, you know. So the community of international travelers was a lot broader and more segmented in those days than say like the thru hikers even in the early 2000s when I started thru hiking. The thru hiking community was much more tight-knit than the international community.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah. But there are segments like, so, you know, I back in the day used to go to Burning Man every year. And in the early, you know, early 2000s, that was a really, really tight knit sort of micro community that, as that scene has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, that community has had, a harder and harder time sort of wrangling itself. But in 2000, going to Burning Man was like being, you know, in part of a club that most people had never even heard of, you know?
Yeah.
So there was definitely community in that kind of thing.
I think for the mind to rationalize and for the mind to kind of understand the concept of community, there's always these broad overlays of community, like the hiking community, which is a massive broad overlay. But then you have to kind of, at least for the mind to comprehend it is like it segments down into the AT community. It sounds segments down into the AT class of community. So there's like you said, there's so many niche communities within like a broader term. At least in my perspective, that's how it sometimes works. Is you're always a part of the bigger, broader, but then these interpersonal connections happen on the more niche field. Yeah, I was curious about how that worked with the international community as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's a lot of it is sort of dependent on where you are in the world too, you know, and kind of where you're going to travel to and that sort of thing. So
yep.
The international scene is definitely much more based around that sort of niche market than say the the thru hiker community has a more broader appeal of, if you hike any long distance trail, you're a thru hiker and cool. And so we have some common ground that we can talk about, but just because we travel internationally doesn't mean that we necessarily have anything super, you know, super in common or whatever. So yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. And the international travel thing for me was, I wasn't really seeking a community so much as just curiosity. And I would find little communities along the way that I was like, wow, this is really cool, you know? And, in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I was traveling around the States, I would do a bunch of on fish tour and just see a bunch of fish shows. And so there's a tiny little micro community of people just like traveling around doing that thing. And so it was all these little tiny communities that oftentimes share commonality and oftentimes are vastly different than each other. But the thru hiking community was the one that sort of had the biggest impact on me, because it was kind of the most cohesive, but also the broadest in terms of the diversity of people involved in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have all walks of life that come out there. Like you were talking about the international community, especially if you're pursuing the same goal, it's more on that shoestring budget. But you have doctors out hiking. You have people that are just making ends meet. You have every level of, I guess if we want to focus on the financial source, but if you have every level of economical subset out there, you have every level of cultural subset out there. It's like, yeah, very, very diverse. So,
and the trail becomes like the great leveler, right? Like you might be a millionaire and I might be a pauper, but both our feet hurt, you know, we're both out here hiking and the trail doesn't change no matter what our wallet looks like. So, it's a great leveler. And so people from all different backgrounds and walks of life come into this community and become a part of this community. Whereas a lot of other communities there's sort of predestined factors that will determine whether or not you're going to sort of fit into that community or not. And I really like that about the thru hiking community, that it is as diverse as it is. It could be more diverse and we'd like to see that. And we're working towards that kind of thing, but that's, baby steps.
Yeah. And what I love about it too, is you don't talk about the financial aspect or the career aspect. I mean, I hiked with the guy for, over a month. And it took until like the very last day we were hiking together I don't even know how it got brought up, but he eventually told me what he did. And he had retired from big job on Wall Street and just he had cash in his pension plan or something like that. And he was just, he was a very economically well-off guy. And you would just, it didn't matter. It didn't matter at all, because it was just like, you were hiking with the person because you enjoy their company. You were hiking with the person because you enjoy their personality and you clicked on a human-to-human level instead of defining what we sometimes do in society. Connect on a more human level.
Yeah, totally. The measure of success on the thru hike is vastly different than the measure of success in, say, the broader, American society, right? It isn't about the finance or the stuff you have or whatever else, however else you want to define success in America. That's a can of worms. But on trail, success is very well defined. Like, are you making your miles? Are you comfortable? Are you healthy? Are you still out there hiking?
We could even get deeper into that can of worms and say success is not necessarily defined by the miles, but how you're feeling out there. We could go into the very
what benefit you're getting from it, right? Like are you still having fun? If you're out there having fun, then keep doing it,
Yeah, so let's get out of the philosophical before we dive too deep and get stuck. I've done that before. Unless you wanted to dive deeper. I'm game to dive deeper as well. All right. So let's get into your hiking a little bit. So you talked about curiosity being satiated a lot in the international travel, and then you shifted your view to hiking, backpacking through hiking, and it consumed you. So your curiosity was being satiated in the hiking culture. Can you walk me through 2008 forward for you? So you did the AT. What did that propel you into next? Not necessarily just a hiking trail, but what did that propel you into, like, life-wise next?
Well, the AT was a little bit interesting for me. I had been living on the West Coast and had planned on returning to Oregon post-AT, even though I'm from the East Coast. Okay. And that didn't materialize at the time. I finished AT and ended up staying back East. So that was, you know, a coastal change and a sort of an unexpected one. But it worked out. It worked out real well. So I did the AT in 08. And then in 09, I did the Long Trail in Vermont.
Nice.
Which is kind of logical. Yeah, logical progression. Yeah. And after that, I was really starting to put the pieces together. I wanted to do the PCT, but again, didn't, you know, I did the Long Trail in like September. Mm-hmm. So didn't have a whole lot of time between September and April and wasn't able to come up with the cash flow to do the PCT. So I figured I would do the John Muir Trail instead and pop out west and get a little taste of it. And so I did the JMT in 2010 and then the Colorado Trail in 11. And then, you know, that cycle had kind of repeated itself where because I was doing a trail sometime in the summer, I wasn't able to financially put the PCT together. So I took a year off. I took 12 off and then did the PCT in 13.
Okay.
And then Continental Divide Trail in 15. And then Bay Circuit Trail here in Massachusetts in 2017, and then New England Trail 2019. Yeah.
Quite the rest.
Tapping them out.
Yeah. You've walked some places.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Turn-ons include long walks.
There you go. So the progression, you got consumed. You got consumed by the hiking lifestyle, but you had to balance it with living and what we all don't like to admit, but what we all have to do is work. So what were you doing for work in those years as you puzzle piece together in trail systems?
Oh yeah. So when I was traveling internationally, I was basically in food service industry. I was a bartender and did some kitchen work and worked in restaurants. And that was easy because I could at the time pick up and drop jobs as I wanted to here in the Boston area and make a good amount of cash and then disappear for a while. Mm-hmm. And then when I, just before I started through hiking, I got into the outdoor industry and I worked for REI for a little while. And eventually after the AT, realized REI wasn't really where I needed to be and started working for Patagonia. Okay. And I worked for them. Yeah, I worked for them for the next 6 years or so. So about 13 years total in the outdoor gear industry. And so most of that, the bulk of that through hiking happened while I was working for Patagonia. They were a great company for that sort of thing because they were, you know, they're founded by a bunch of dirtbags. So it's easy to be like, hey, I need a month off to go hike. They're like, yep, let us know when you're back. You know, cool. You know, so yeah, no, so that was, so through most of the through hiking, all the way up until the Continental Divide Trail in 15. So from 08 to 15, I worked for PATA on both coasts, East Coast and West Coast. And, a fantastic company. And, you know, that as I look back now, that was really a kind of a building a foundation for what would eventually become, you know, Triple Crown Coffee.
Yeah.
Was the experiences that I had working for Patagonia and understanding the outdoor industry from that perspective, as opposed to, say, from REI's perspective, you know.
What, because you might be one of the only guests I've been able to ask this question to, please just don't answer it if I'm asking something that you don't want to necessarily answer, but what's the difference between the differences between REI and Patagonia that you saw? It sounds like Patagonia lets you be more you at a certain sense. Was REI adversely like holding you back? I don't know. I might be reading too much into it, but what?
It's a very interesting question. REI, when it was originally founded and its original concept is quite good, right? And what it grew into is essentially the Walmart of gear, right? And it still does some very good work, and it's still a reputable company. It's still a company that I do business with, but the realities of an industry and a business, I should say, a business that size is very difficult to stay true to an ethos. And so REI had some really great talking points. And then every time, you know, when I decided I was going to hike the AT, I've been working for these guys for almost 7 years at two different stores. And I was like, hey, can I get a leave of absence to go, you know, through hike? And they were like, hell no. So I did the entire AT without health insurance because they wouldn't cut me a little bit of slack after, you know, 7 years of service. And I was like, man, all I'm asking for is, you know, a leave of absence. I don't even need you to pay me. I just want to know that I, A, have a job and can get health coverage on the in-between. And they're like, you can buy Cobra. And I was like, Cobra is more than my TruVac going to cost. You can buy Cobra. This doesn't make any sense at all. So after that experience, one of the reasons I didn't go back to the West Coast, because I wasn't going to go back to the REI store I'd been working with. And you know, when I interviewed with Patagonia, I got a very, very different sense of how they treat their people and what, you know, in the corporate perspective of Patagonia, a job is part of your life, and that work-life balance is really important, and they want their employees to have good work-life balance and go on out and have adventures and be the people that they are, that you know, that is what attracts them to work for that company, as opposed to the experience I had at REI. So I don't want to disparage REI as a company. They donate a lot of money. They do a lot of good work, but yes, from a perspective of taking care of their employees, they definitely oversold what they were able to offer. And in my experience with them, and when I started working for Patagonia, I found the exact opposite. I found a company that was truly interested in the employee and the worker having the tools that they need to live the life that they want to live and have their adventures. Hmm. And although it was retail and it wasn't, you know, the financial aspect of it wasn't fantastic, it was enough. And the time, the ability to take time off and still have health insurance and know I have a job waiting for me was so much worth, you know, the extra $2-3 an hour or whatever that I could have made in some other industry, but not have that flexibility. So it was a striking difference between the two companies for sure.
Yeah. I was just curious there because from what you had said, I'm like, man, Patagonia is sounding different. So I assume, well, have you read the book Let My People Go Surfing by Yvonne?
Oh yeah. There, Yvonne Chouinard is an amazing individual. And when I bought Triple Crown Coffee, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. Yep. I was really reluctant to get into business. It's not really my style, right? Okay. But you know, having worked for Yvonne, there are good ways to be in business and there are bad ways to be in business. And he's definitely someone that is eloquent enough to lay it out there and be like, look, this can be done a proper way. You don't have to be, you know, a horrific corporate entity to be in business. You can be good and be in business. And that was inspiring. So yeah, for sure. Let My People Go Surfing is, you know, a very good friend of mine has just gone back to school for his MBA. And I just bought him a copy of Let My People Go Surfing. And I was like, I know they're like feeding you a lot of information right now, man, but, you know, add this book to the reading list. So
it's writing a quote unquote business plan, but also implementing in how to live it. Let's just like you had just said, is like REI has great aspirations and great things that they preach, but sometimes when it trickles down in a company that's a massive size, communication gets lost. They might be actively wanting to live it, but once that communication gets down to the everyday person that's working there, it can get a little lost. And yeah, when I read that book, it was really inspirational trying to see how he filtered information down from a massive business, but still letting it feel like it's a ground roots business in itself. So yeah, I love that book as well. So let's bounce into Triple Crown Coffee. We've talked about it. Let's get into it a little bit. So you had all this experience in the outdoor industry. You had all this experience through hiking. You had all this experience traveling. What was the impetus for you to create a company? As you just said, you weren't leaning towards that, wasn't who you defined yourself as being, as somebody that would want to. So what was the impetus for Triple Crown Coffee?
You know, the old saying, you know, the trail provides, right?
Yes.
And I'm a food and beverage and coffee snob, right? I'm all about the good feeds. And so one of my things when I thru hike is I don't skimp on coffee. Like I don't do instant, you know what I mean? And so Fancy. as I was going through my you know, progression of through hikes, I was, like a lot of people, trying to find a really good way to get coffee and do coffee well on trail without being a big mess and without it being a real pain in the ass.
Yeah.
I eventually settled on making these kind of cold soak or hot soak bags. They're basically like really big tea bags. And I had been producing them for myself and, you know, making them out of whatever coffee I was buying locally. And I made a whole bunch of them for my CDT hike and mail dropped them out to myself and shared them with some friends and was talking to somebody on trail. And it had occurred to me, I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if there was a charity coffee company that donated money to the nonprofits that, you know, that oversee these trails. And the guy I was having coffee was like, yeah, man, that company just got started. There's a thru hiker out in Oregon. Helicopter was her trail name, is her trail name. And he's like, she just started that. It's called Triple Crown Coffee. And I was like, oh, no way. Typical me, come up with an idea right after it's been done. Right. And so after the CDT, I jumped online and I started buying pounds of coffee off the internet from this Triple Crown Coffee. Hmm. And time went on. And then about two and a half years ago, I sent an email to Helicopter and I was like, hey, I'm looking to buy some beans, but it looks like the website's sold out. Can you help brother out? And she's like, yeah, totally. I'll send you some beans. But, you know, at the end of the year, she's like, I'm planning on mothballing the company and kind of shutting it down. You know, if her trail name didn't give it away, Helicopter's a airline pilot.
Oh.
And, you know, had a real job. Yeah. And had kind of created this coffee company as, sort of a hobby company and like, you know, micro roasting everything and really like geeking out on making like super, super really good coffee,
yep.
But in a manner that wasn't, you know, scalable for business and wasn't really something that she had time to delve all the way into, you know what I mean? Like with her actual career and things, it got to the point where it was sucking up too much of her time and there wasn't going to be a return on it, you know?
Yeah.
And at the state that it was at. After a couple of emails back and forth, I was like, hey, you know, for me, this was the coffee I was drinking on a daily. And I was like, man, I can't not have my coffee. So so I went online to buy 3 pounds of coffee and I ended up buying the company from her.
What was the process like? So I'm assuming you flew out to meet her in Oregon, chat with her. What was the process?
No, we did it all over the phone and all over email. At first I sent her an email and I was like, would you consider selling me Triple Crown coffee? And her initial response wasn't no, but it wasn't yes. It was like, well, I'm not really interested in selling Triple Crown coffee. That's not really what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, maybe I'll just keep it and use it for like special events here and there, like once or twice a year. We'll drag it out to PCT days or something like that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, but if I was going to sell it, I would want to sell it to someone that was involved in the community. And I had just finished my Triple Crown. And I was like, well, you know, here's my resume. Here's my background in food and beverage and my background in outdoor industry. And, you know, for a bunch of years in between, I had been a sales rep for a craft brewery, for a little beer brewery. So I had a background in sales for beverage like that. And, you know, we had a couple of phone calls and chatted about it. And she was like, yeah, you know what? You seem like a really good fit and someone that can take Triple Crown Coffee to, you know, the next level and beyond and keep it in the community and keep it true to its origin. You know, like I think there was no way she was going to sell it to some like corporate entity that was just going to use the logo and the name and go off to, you know, plunder, you know? Yeah. So
yeah, she wanted to keep the product true and she wanted to keep the essence of the company true by, yeah, keeping it within the thru hiking community. I love that story. So
then I bought it, and then I actually didn't even meet Helicopter, and because of pandemic and all that, I had plans on going out to PCT days, but you know that year was canceled because of pandemic. So I didn't meet Helicopter face to face until this past year at PCT days. I popped out to Oregon to do the festival and got a chance to actually sit down with her and give her a big hug and thank her for all the work and recipes and all that kind of stuff. And it's awesome, man. It's
so you blinked and you blinked and now you own a coffee, I want to say coffee shop, but you own a coffee business. So expectations, yeah, versus reality. So circling back to what you had said earlier, is like you were never one that necessarily wanted to own a business or run a business, and this thing fell in your lap, this opportunity and this like thing that let you connect the two lifestyles that you were living. So yeah, once it was there, once you blinked and you own this business, How'd that feel? How'd that feel knowing that you could pursue your passion, your lifestyle, your work, and kind of intertwine it all into one?
Yeah, it was. It's really interesting, man, because it was the culmination of so many passions in my life that had all kind of been separate. We're all kind of swirling around and you know, got low enough down in the funnel in the swirl that they came together, you know. Yeah. And it was it seemed like such a natural thing to me. When I kind of jokingly sent the email, like, would you sell me the company? I was like, that would be kind of awesome. You know, you would think, oh man, I'm about to buy a business. I should be scared. At no point was I like freaked out about it. I was like, let's do this. This sounds great. I'm in the mood for a project and this sounds like a project. And, you know, I had more passion than I had knowledge about coffee. And so I jumped in head first and totally got to geek out. And, you know, after, you know, 20 years as a bartender, geeking out on beer and wine and spirits and all that kind of stuff, to be able to like delve really, really deep into a whole new beverage was really exciting for me. And not a whole new beverage, but you know, yeah. newer to me in terms of the depth of what I was willing to learn and know about it. So it was awesome. And, you know, the reality of owning a business is not glamorous by any means. It's a lot of emails and paperwork and kind of a pain in the ass, especially come tax time. But it's, you know, but that's just part of the learning curve. Like, not only was I jumping in head first to learn absolutely everything I could about the process of coffee, but also about the process of business and what Triple Crown was and what I wanted it to be and where I wanted it to go, you know? So it's been a really remarkable journey in the last 2 years that I've owned it.
So you combined your work and your play. And again, this is my own curiosity speaking, because I haven't had the opportunity to speak to many people that have done that and have had that opportunity. So once you combined them, did it taint the play side of it a little bit? Because at a certain point, now you're always working. So now you're always working because your company is about the trails that you love and the company is built for the community that you love. Did it taint it or did it add to it? What were the feelings there? So yeah, now you have this company. What's that blend? Yeah. What's that blend looking like?
That's interesting. You know, at one point when I was when I was tapping out trails every year, I got offered a job as a wilderness guide out in Colorado. Like, oh, come and help us take people on hikes. And I considered it for a hot minute, and I eventually was like no way, because my passion is through hiking, right? And yeah. I do that for me. That's my time in the woods, in the wilderness. That's my sort of recharge time. And I didn't want that to become my career, right? I didn't want to ruin through hiking or hiking in general by having to make it a 9-to-5, right?
Yeah.
And then this comes along, but this is a little bit different because the business end of Triple Crown Coffee is the coffee business, right? Okay. And then the community end of Triple Crown Coffee is the through hiking community. And so that's really, really nice. And I don't know how much of a coffee geek you are, but we're in what's called the third wave of coffee. And one of the key ingredients to third wave coffee is community, right? Like, you can't just spend a bunch of money on marketing and have a bunch of, you know, radio advertisements or whatever to drum up business, right? You have to have a footing in a community. And if you try to build that footing in a disingenuous way, or you try to like insert yourself into a community that isn't yours, it's probably not going to go well for you. And I was fortunate enough to buy a company that was in my community and was a community that I was already, you know, almost a decade invested in. And so it's remarkable that it has been as, knock on wood, that it's been as low stress as it has been for me, because it's a combination of passions, and that passion, neither of those, I haven't burned out those passions yet. You know what I mean? So it's not stress for me in that regard of like worrying about, oh no, my passion just became my job. Now I'm like, sweet, my passion is now one of my jobs, you know? So
yeah. You asked how much of a coffee aficionado I am. My partner likes to call what I drink bean water. So I usually make her a pressed coffee pot in the morning. And then I'm just, I guess, for me, I've always drank just drip coffee and I've been okay with that. Like, the burnter, the better. Yep. And then after I give her like the fresh coffee, I just pour more hot water on top of like the quarter pressed left and just yeah. dilute it. And I'm yep. like, this tastes like coffee to me. So I'm not necessarily a coffee aficionado, but I can see the appeal.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing, right? Coffee is kind of like beer in this regard, right? There is schwill junk beer out there.
Yeah.
And even the lightest, most terrible, you know, adjunct American lager is still pretty refreshing on a hot day. You know what I mean? and a really, really, really well-crafted Pilsner or a really beautifully crafted amber ale or stout or something is like a thing to behold, right? And so you can have as amazing an experience or as simple as an experience as you want with coffee. And I really like that there's that kind of pantheon of it can be an everyday just a cup of drip, no problem, or you know, you can get really fancy on it and make something that's quite remarkable. So I love the fact that out of one simple bean you have all these sort of options. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's as artistic as you want it to be, and that is a beautiful concept. Is you can choose it to be very simplistic, or you can choose it to get an actual like passion and hobby. The fact that you can make coffee a hobby is and a passion is very, and it's an interesting subject to me. It funnels into every part of your life if you want it to. So
yeah, and you know, there's a lot of aspects to it. You get an aspect of ritual, you get an aspect of kind of data science, where like when you're making coffee at home, you're like, well, what did I do yesterday and how am I going to improve it upon today? Well, I'm going to try a 2 degree Fahrenheit more difference on this particular roast and see if I get a deeper extraction, and I'm going to dial my grind back by, you know, 3 or 5 microns to try to get better extraction. So like you're always sort of like tinkering and playing, trying to find this sort of elusive like perfect cup, right? And some days you really get really close, you're like, wow, this cup's amazing. And some days you're like, oh wow, that didn't work. But that experimentation is kind of part of the fun, you know, like and kind of dialing it in. And the world of coffee is vast and fun to play with.
I've wanted to say this sentence for many years in my life. Let's talk about the beans.
Nice.
Where do you source your beans, and what does the sourcing process look like for you? I've read up a little bit about you, but for the listeners, can you walk me through the sourcing?
Yeah, totally. So when I bought Triple Crown Coffee, it came with some roast profiles, and those roast profiles were specific to certain beans that were being used. And so I wanted to replicate that as best as possible. I also wanted to make sure that the product that I was putting out was not only the best cup of coffee, you know, the best cup in the cup itself, but that the entire supply chain and everything as far back as we could get was as equitable for everybody involved as possible, right? I wanted to make sure that the farmers were getting paid a fair share. I wanted to make sure that the coffee was organic. I wanted to make sure that there weren't any terrible practices going on. And in the world of coffee, unfortunately, there's a lot of that kind of shenanigans that happens, right? So I did a lot of research, and I had a really long list of things that I wanted in my supply chain. And my background in beer had led me to realize that micro roasting coffee and scaling that up to a sizable thing was an obstacle that I won't say it's impossible. I will say it's a very, very difficult way to go.
Yeah.
So what I did was I decided to find a roasting partner that could roast to the specifications, to the roast profiles that I had when I bought Triple Crown Coffee. And so I hunted around and I found a roasting partner here in Massachusetts called Dean's Beans. And those guys do an amazing job and have been doing an amazing job since the late 70s or early 80s. They not only had the beans that I was looking for and was able to do the roast that I was asking them to do, but they had the acumen of the ethics surrounding around coffee that I was really looking for. All the way to the point where I wanted, at some point, I want Triple Crown Coffee to become a B corporation, and we're financially too small to do that right now. But in order for that to happen in the future, I needed my supply chain to be, I wanted my supply chain to be B certified as well. And Dean's Beans was one of the very few companies that I talked to that was actually, a B Corp. And a member of 1% for the Planet, and all, you know, sort of all the other things that I had on my wish list. They were one of two companies that I came across that actually ticked all the boxes. And they've been awesome to work with. And they're right here in Mass. So, you know, like I really couldn't ask for more. So at the moment we are contract roasting with them, and And that will probably remain for a while. If at some point we Triple Crown Coffee gets big enough that we can bring roasting back in house, I would love to do that. But I will still probably continue to work with Dean's to get unroasted beans from them because their supply chain they have such a long history with their supply chain, and it's so tight and it's so well put together that if I was to try to start something like that from scratch, it would take decades.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no need to reinvent the wheel. When someone's doing it right, support them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're a small business, and they've been doing it right for a long time. And so I'm super stoked to be able to support them and to build Triple Crown Coffee's success off of the, you know, the foundation of success that they've made. So
yeah, that's what I was curious when before you even hopped on this chat is the scalability of coffee, like especially trying to keep it as true and as micro as you can while also scaling, if that makes sense. You're trying to keep it as small batch as you can, or as connected, or the process from the bean to the consumer stays as little as possible, but you were able to find a way to achieve that and scale while keeping all the virtues and values that you wished.
Yeah. And you know, I haven't had the problem of having to scale up. We're still really, really small. And so the scale and the volume that we're at, a few hundred pounds of coffee a year is no problem where I'm at now. If we need to scale, well, honestly, I don't foresee Triple Crown Coffee scaling into Dunkin' Donuts size or Starbucks size or anything like that. You know what I mean? That's not even something I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So without the like world conquest mentality, if the company is able to so basically the way Triple Crown Coffee works is for every pound of coffee that we sell, we donate $1 to the 501c3 nonprofits that oversee whichever trail that roast is named after. So we've got three trails, three roasts: Appalachian Trail, Pacific Crest Trail, Continental Divide Trail. You buy a pound of CDT roast, and $1 goes to the CDTC.
Love
plain
it.
And simple, nice and easy.
Yeah.
Right? So as long as that is happening, and as long as the company is able to survive, pay its bills, and provide donations on an annual basis, I'm stoked. Right. And if it's small dollar donations now and turns into bigger dollar donations later, great. But it's doing its thing and it's working, and that's all it really has to do. It would be really cool if someday it paid me. That would be awesome. I would love to quit my day job and do coffee full time. That's not the reality right now, but you know, baby steps, man. And I'm not pushing Triple Crown Coffee to be something that it isn't. I'm not pushing it into growth that it can't afford or can't do. I'm happy to sort of let it incubate and do its own thing and just kind of grow at its own natural pace. And as the community demands more and more of this fantastic coffee, I'm happy to produce it and send it out, you know. Like, it's a very interesting business to be in because it isn't hampered by the has to make profit at the moment. It can just keep doing its thing and, you know, there's no pressure on it. So that's really a nice place to be.
Yeah. I do love hearing that too, because the more people that I'm able to have these conversations with that do run companies in the outdoors, that it's either their full-time job or it's their passion, or they combine the two, they quit their daytime job, whatever mix and match you want to say, vast majority of these people, they want it to be a business, but they don't necessarily go into it saying, I have to, quarter one, I have to make this percentage more, quarter two, I have to make this percentage more. It's just continuing to pursue what they love and continuing to share that with others. So I love that that's a resounding answer with a lot of the people I chat to, and you included. So Triple Crown Coffee, I enjoy that answer.
Yeah.
Let's. I'm gonna start trying to wrap up the show here. I don't want to take up too much of your time, so I have the last three questions. So the second to last one, we're gonna stay within Triple Crown Coffee, but it's also gonna be a question for you. So it's gonna be a two-parter. So going back to a little bit of the philosophy we were discussing earlier, what does the trail mean to you? And that can incorporate the AT, that can incorporate the PCT, CDT. It can just be one. It can be all. What does the trail mean to you? And then a flip side to that coin as well is, what does Triple Crown Coffee mean to you? So what does that business, what does that passion, what does Triple Crown Coffee mean to you? So it's a two-parter.
Yeah. Okay. Good question, by the way. What does quote unquote the trail mean, right? This is interesting. You know, each one of these trails has its own flavor. It has its own distinct sort of personality. And I really enjoy exploring the sort of differences and the nuances of each one of these trails. The trail as the sort of overarching umbrella of what is through hiker culture, what is, you know, section hiker culture, what is just hiker culture in general, is a really interesting, I think, sort of you know, metaphor for what is life, right? Like it's a path, it's a journey, and there are destinations on the journey, but it's really more about the journey itself. And the journey isn't just the hiking; it's the journey that you take to get to trail, and it's the journey that you take to learn more about yourself when you're on trail. And it's, you know, it's those hard questions you ask yourself when you've spent a lot of time alone on trail, and you know, the process of self discovery and the process of self reckoning and you know, the internal work that's done while you're out there, that the self reflection that happens on trail. Trail as an entity is like really nothing else that I've ever experienced.
Metaphors inside of it are quite a lot for such a small spit of land sometimes, or a small narrow path that's physical. The metaphors spiritually, emotionally, figuratively inside of just a simple path in front of you, simple and massive air quotes. Yeah, it's a lot. I my mind circles around in that thought almost every day.
Right? It's wild how, like, such a simple function, a simple action, really, we just walk. Yeah. We put one foot in front of the other and we walk. And as humans, we've evolved to walk. We're really good at it. And that's all we're doing out there is walking. But man, it takes on such a, there's so many layers that the more and more you do it, the more and more you peel back and discover about it. It's really quite remarkable. And the benefit that it has had for me as a human and becoming a better person or trying to become a better person through that path of discovery and just, you know, taking the time to disconnect from the chaos of society or whatever and going for a walk is really, really powerful. So, you know, for me, trail, what is trail? Trail is a mirror, you know what I mean? Trail is a reflection of the journey that we have through life. And you know, you can squander that journey or you can really embrace it, dig into it and enjoy the moment of it. And if trail teaches you nothing else, it's to enjoy the moment and, you know, stay present and really dig into what simple pleasures are and what simplicity, how pleasurable and satisfying simplicity can be. Yeah. You know, that sort of leads into what is Triple Crown Coffee. For me, Triple Crown Coffee is the backside of that. It's the giving back of that, right? Like these trails, they don't just exist in the wilderness. There's been a lot of people and a lot of effort and a lot of hours and a lot of time and energy spent to create, maintain these trails, and around that has sprung up this culture of people that support each other and support the community as a whole and do nice things for complete strangers just because they have this commonality of, you know, a 1 foot wide stretch of dirt. And like the overall big picture of what trail has meant to me personally is the impetus for me to want to give back and to put some positivity and put some energy back into that cycle so that hikers that come, you know, beyond, you know, past me have an experience that is beneficial to them as well. And to make sure that these experiences and these trails are protected and maintained, you know, in the future. And Triple Crown Coffee is a very concrete way of doing that. And that, you know, let's throw some money at the problem and raise some money to give to the groups that are doing the rolling up the sleeves and putting in the work. And, you know, for me, it's just a method of, it's an indulgence of me, you know, indulging my passions, but it's using that indulgence in a positive manner for the overall community and for, you know, hikers that come after me and hopefully keep this thing going, you know, like, thru-hiking is such a gift and such a blessing to my life that I want to make sure that other people have the option to have that. And I want to make sure that these trails are protected into perpetuity.
Yeah, I like how you touched on that too, is because a lot of the time you see that physical trail ahead of you, and unless you have the unless you have the education of what went into it and the understanding of what went into it, there can be an assumption of, oh no, this is just always here. But that's not true. That's not true in many different definitions. It's not always there because of land ownership. It's not always there because of maintenance. It's not always there because of all these factors that have to play in together. So there's always those two sides that you have to kind of balance. You have to balance the personal use and the personal enjoyment with it, and then the balance of the giving back so others can continue to fuel and funnel that enjoyment of it. And if you feed both, it creates a wonderfully vicious circle of continuing that momentum. So I like how you touched that. You are way more eloquent, can't even say the word, eloquent than I am. I still don't think I now I'm just stammering. I can't pronunciate eloquent, and then I can't pronunciate. We're going off the rails here. So I'm going to keep this The very last
To touch on that last little bit real quick, it was the long trail in Vermont. It was actually my second trail that sort of really drove that point home for me. Like the AT seemed to me to have always been there, and it was just like always a consciousness. And then I realized that the long trail had been there longer, and that the long trail had been there for everyone living in Vermont longer than their entire lives. Like every human that lives in Vermont, the trail has been there their entire life. And I was like, whoa, that's now we're into multi-generational situations. Well, that kind of blew my mind. And then I look at trails like, you know, the New England Trail that is just kind of coming into its own. And I'm like, this is cool that we can start this and protect these areas for future generations. Like it's really quite cool.
Yeah. Once you strip away the time and the concept of it's just always been here, and then you start to look at it as saying, no, this actually was built from scratch, and then it continues to be maintained and continues to be built for the next generation. Yeah, once you strip away the concept of time around the trails, it starts to have a whole new meaning. So yeah, I completely agree with you on that. I wanted to touch on your perception of the New England Trail, but we're already going over the hour mark. But actually, quickly, how do you enjoy the New England Trail? I want to ask one last question, but yeah, quickly, how do you enjoy the New England Trail?
Yeah. New England Trail really blew me away. I loved it. And I had done the Bay Circuit Trail first. Okay. And Bay Circuit Trail is a little tiny, you know, it's about 210 miles or so. And it loops its way through Massachusetts, through a lot of these little communities. And so it's, you're in and out of a lot of little towns, and it's kind of very suburban, as it were. And I expected the New England Trail to feel the same, since it's Connecticut, Massachusetts, that it was going to be somewhat suburban, a lot of little villages and walking through people's backyards and such. And the New England Trail was way more wilderness experience than I was expecting, considering the, you know, population densities that it's walking through. And it's classic New England ridges, you know, like really beautiful. It blew me away. I was not expecting it to be as beautiful as it was. I also did it in the early spring, and very, very late winter, early spring. There was still snow, and I had the thing almost to myself. I think I saw three or four other people, like, on the entire trail. I saw nobody. So it holds a sort of special place for me in terms of just the aloneness that I had on it. What really, if you have the opportunity to thru-hike the New England Trail, it has its own set of challenges. I know you've done it, but I mean, you know, for your listeners, if you have the opportunity to do it and you're thinking about it, do it. It's a great little trail, and way more engaging and wilderness than I had expected.
Yeah, and I like how you touched on it at the very beginning of our conversation. Was you said something that I say a lot as well, and that kind of my mind revolves around, is that each trail has its own personality. So like, you only can get a New England through hike experience, or a New England section hike experience, New England Trail section hike, or New England Trail through hike experience on the New England Trail. So it has a different flavor because it's a different trail. So yes, I'm glad that you have a recommendation for the listeners as well to go out and experience it. So very last question. I'm going to, once again, be a two-parter. I don't know how to separate the two or combine the two. Yeah, oh boy. I think you'll be able to, from just the chat we've had, I think you're going to be able to answer it pretty quickly. But I always try to wrap it up with this one. So Is there a goal that you're looking to reach as Cookie Monster or as Chris Perello? Is there a goal that you're personally looking for in this adventure lifestyle, in this thru-hiking lifestyle? Is there an overall goal that you're reaching for? And then on the other side of that coin, is there a goal that Triple Crown Coffee has? Is there a goal that Triple Crown Coffee is looking to reach and looking to strive for? So, yes, two-sided one again.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about goals on trails, right, when it comes to thru-hiking or traveling or whatever, is that they continually move. As soon as you score one goal, you're like, oh, man, well, what's next, right? Like, you finish the AT, and then you start thinking, well, man, I should probably do the PCT. And then once the PCT is done, you're like, well, if I don't do the Triple Crown now, what have I wasted all this time doing, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting in that regard. I am just shy of the 10,000 mile mark with the trails that I've hiked. So I would like to break the 10,000 mile club. I'm not suggesting I'm about to retire, but I'd like to at least tick that one off the list. There's a whole list of trails that I'd love to hike, and I'll get them done in due time.
Yeah.
For as long as the knees hold out.
I said the same thing.
You know. Yeah. And you know, when I started traveling, I was like, man, I want to hit all seven continents. I want to visit all seven continents. And so far, I've got 6 out of 7. So wow. You know, at some point, I'd like to pop over and check out Africa because I've never been there, and do a. You know, have all seven continents and break 10,000 miles, and those would be cool milestones. I don't know that they're like an end goal so much, but they're the in between goal now. And you know, I tell this to people when they ask me, oh, I'm gonna do my first thru hike. What do I need to know? And I tell them, you know, you need to set micro goals, because if you're focused on Mexico to Canada, or if you're focused on Katahdin, that's really far away, and that's a hard goal to have in mind. And you need to keep that in the back of your brain, but really your goal needs to be the next day, the next 2 days, the next 3 days. Sometimes your goal is, I need to make it to the top of this mountain and back down, you know? So, like, focus on those micro goals that achieve the big picture rather than, like, the esoteric far away big huge goal that seems really really daunting.
Yes.
So yeah, those are some personal goals on the horizon, hopefully. Okay. That are hopefully achievable. And for Triple Crown Coffee, that's a really interesting question, because Triple Crown Coffee is currently achieving its goal, right? Like, yeah. it produces donations for the nonprofits, for the three nonprofits, the AATC, PCTA, and CDTC. And as long as it continues to do that, I'm stoked. And I would like it to grow, and I would like to see those donations grow. And I would love to see Triple Crown Coffee get to a point where it is, where mobile vending is a thing, where we've got a food truck that we can pull into festivals and events and sling coffee. And I would love to eventually get to a point where we can get it to be a B corporation and protect it legally into perpetuity, so that when the eventual day comes that I have to, when I am not Triple Crown Coffee anymore, that its mission statement and that its ability to provide for trails is protected through whoever gets it next, you know. So I want it to be its own entity that can continue, you know, like. I'm the steward of Triple Crown Coffee at the moment, and I want to set it up for success so that it can continue long after Cookie Monster does, you know?
Personally, as well as with Triple Crown Coffee, I liked how you put that the dominoes, well, the goals become like dominoes, is they're ever shifting. So once you set one and you hit that one, it just leads into the next one. So yeah, strong goals to have, Cookie Monster. Very, very last part of the show is I like to turn over the platform over to you, over to Triple Crown Coffee, so people know where they can, support the trails, buy some good beans. That sounds weird coming out of my mouth. Let's see if I can restate that. Where people can interact with you, support the trails, where they can, support a coffee company that holds true to its ethos and to its value. So, yes, the platform is yours.
Yeah, totally. You know, the little tagline that we like to use is support the trails you love one cup at a time, right? But you can do that at triplecrowncoffee.com. And we've got three distinct roasts up there that you can order, and we ship anywhere in the country via U.S., PS, and we do drop ship to trail. So if you are planning a thru hike coming up this season or next season or whenever, get in touch. Shoot me an email, info@triplecrowncoffee.com, and I'm happy to set up mail drops for you. The backcountry bean bags that I produced way back in the day for my own consumption on trail are available in all three of our roasts for all three of our trails. So check them out, and triplecrowncoffee.com.
Triplecrowncoffee.com. Awesome. I'll put it all in the show notes. So Cookie Monster, thank you so much for sharing the story about yourself. Thank you so much for sharing the story about Triple Crown Coffee. Really enjoyed this.
Constantine, I appreciate taking the time to have a chat, man. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Well, folks, another week, another guest, another episode. We have been really enjoying sharing these stories and really diving into the minds behind the miles, the minds behind the hiker, the minds behind the outdoors person. We have been loving this format. We have been loving the conversations. So, yeah, as this show has continued to grow, we have been really loving being able to share all these stories. So, if you all really enjoy this show, this episode, this podcast, we would love to hear from you. So, please, if you are able, go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, leave us a rating, and let us know. Let us know how you are enjoying the show so we can continue to share and we can continue to spread these stories as we dive into the who and the how, not necessarily the what, as we get to take a look into the minds and really see what makes these hikers tick, really see what makes these hikers, these outdoors people, these climbers continue to want to live a life of adventure. So yeah, please leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. Like, subscribe, every little thing really helps us and fuels us to continue to share these stories and to continue to let us have these conversations with more amazing people. And as always, if you have a suggestion, if you know of somebody that you really want to hear on the show, or you yourself want to be a guest on the show, please email us at offtrailpodcast, or visit our Instagram page at offtrailpodcast and communicate with us through there. Send us a message, follow along, get updates on the new guests that are coming out, the new episodes that are coming out. We would love to share your story. We would love to hear from you. Any suggestions, any guests, all are welcome. Hope to see you next week on and off trail.